Oh, yeah.
All right. This is Megan, and I just heard the little beep-beep that said we are recording. I'm going to turn off the entry and exit chimes. I'll do that first.
Entry and exit chimes are off.
And then I'm going to mute everybody out.
All callers are muted and may unmute themselves by pressing star 6.
All right. And so, Katie and Carol, let me make sure you two are still here.
Okay. Can you hear us?
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. Phew.
Fabulous. Yeah. That's never a good way to start a teleseminar.
We have to start all over.
Have been muted out. All right. Well, hooray and welcome to everyone. My name is Megan McIntosh, and I'm kind of many people are calling me the teleseminar queen, and I think that's probably a reasonably apt description. And it's both from the teaching of teleseminars, from the hosting of teleseminars like the one today, and then let's just say I'm an avid consumer of teleseminars. I love them. I think it's just a fabulous way to learn. We have, somewhere between 300 and 400 people, closer to 400 people who are signed up today, and probably, at least two-thirds of the folks will be listening later. Everyone will receive a recording, and that's what's great is you may certainly make as many notes as possible as you go along, and yet it is so great to hear things multiple times. I think all of us as learners, as adult learners, we need to recognize there's nothing wrong with us that we need to listen more than once or read something more than once. We are constantly changing and growing and learning, and so you hear something on a second listen or a fifth listen that you didn't even hear the first time because you weren't ready for it. Your brain wasn't quite ready.
That's true.
It is absolutely true. And I think it's one of the real benefits of being able to access what you're going to learn today and put it on your iPhone or your computer or, you know, whatever it is that you have so that you can listen later on. So my company is Emphasis on Excellence, and more I'm realizing that actually even though I'm not going to change the name, extraordinary is, that's the folks. That's really who I get the most joy from working with. And I'm happy that we have both women and men today, men who had the good sense to know that they also are intuitive. And so they want to know, all right, how can I use that as far as my leadership? And then also, how can they keep supporting other people around them. So I know everybody is here both to learn for himself or herself and then also to be able to share this with other people. Two fabulous guests today, experts in this area and authors of the book Skirt Strategies, 249 Success Tips for Women in Leadership. And quite a few of you have already emailed me and said that you've ordered the book, and that's great. When it came out, I bought a whole bunch of copies, and I've been giving it as gifts. Yes, so I know I'm in the good girl club. I've been giving it as gifts, and so many people have really appreciated it because it's an approachable book. It's not thousands of pages of dense text. You can actually open it up and look at, you know, strategy 135 or strategy 199 and read it, get a handle on it for that day, and then be able to put it into practice for yourself. Mm-hmm. So Katie Snapp is our first guest, and also Carol White, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves as they want to. I think all of us are really, we already have bought into the idea that they're experts or we wouldn't be here. And so we're ready to learn from what you're going to share with us. So the idea is be heard, know your intuitive leadership style. I will be mostly in the background because with three of us, we did teach a whole series called Mini Skirts, and you know, three people is a lot. We spent far more time planning it, of course, than the actual time that we were teaching and just having a blast thinking and working together. So we're kind of a funny little crew. And
that was such fun.
It was fun.
Megan.
It was a lot of fun. So what I'm going to do, though, is I'll also be monitoring email to make sure, not to see if anybody's writing me about anything else, but to see if questions are coming in, because with this many people on the call,
yeah,
it's hard to open it up And so I'll let you know if some questions come in. If you all want to email me, Megan, M-E-G-G-I-N, at Megan.com, and I'll be able to bring up the questions that people didn't submit ahead of time. I'm going to turn it over to both of you. So, Katie and Carol,
okay.
Thank you so much for being here.
We'll take it away. We want to start by thanking you, Megan. I love your network, and I love the stuff that you do, and I get your emails. Carol and I both do, and I do think you're just iconic, in at least in the industries that we run across with you. So
you are the queen of
thank
excellence.
You.
Yes. And you can be a princess or a goddess, whichever title you prefer.
Because we're duchesses. So
we give them away freely.
Okay. So a little bit of background, and I'm not going to go straight into this, but just so you guys have some context for what's going on. Carol and I are business partners. And Skirt Strategy, some of you may have listened in on a teleseminar with Megan 2 years ago, two or three.
I did.
You listened in?
I did.
That was before
yes.
You and I had really kind of driven into this at the depth that we have since then. And, it's fascinating to look at what's happened just in those two and a half short years with the trending and the change with women in leadership. So this is all about understanding what that trend is, where you fit in. Some research we'll share with you as to why we know that women's leadership is different than men's.
And the other thing I want to say is that I'm going to bring up some things for those of you men on the call. There are some great research out there showing why a gender-balanced workplace is so important. So we're going to have a little bit of something for everyone.
Okay. Well, I'll start with the reason why women and men are different. Then we'll give you a little bit of research. We'll also give you some actionables. It's some actually illustrations of how women's leadership is different in action, because often things will sound very theoretical, and people say, oh, nice model, but what's that look like when I'm sitting in my office or when I'm walking down the hall, wherever I work? So just know that. I'll start off with a very clear, provable physiological difference that has lots of implications on the way that we think, talk, decide, take risks, and empathize, and that is brain blood flow. The blood flow in our brains are known to be different between a man and a woman. Now, Carol and I will generalize. This is a term that we've coined, and we're hoping it gets into Wiki pretty soon. We generalize along, we kind of stereotype, and we do that, I know, dangerously, but we use it to typify patterns. We don't do it to label people, but we do it to just say, generally, this gender is this way, and generally, this other gender is that way. So know that you'll hear some of that, and if that turns you off, I just kind of need you to accept that there's some generalization going on for the next hour and a half. Women's blood flow in their brain is all over the place. If we did an fMRI of what happens in the woman's brain, we see that there's blood hitting a lot of different of the four quadrants of the brain pretty regularly. In a man's brain, the blood flow is very focused. And I know there's lots of jokes around this, so you can just create your own joke at home if you'd like to talk about men's blood flow in the brain. But it's very focused, and it's specific to a certain area that a man might be concentrating on. Therefore, men have, and by the way, the blood flow shows where activity is happening at a neuronal level. So if you want to focus on something, it means that the, and I'm not a neurologist, so this is, I'm kind of speaking from what I've read and what I know. But if you're focusing on something, the blood will stabilize in a certain area, and that's where the neuronal path and the neuronal networks tend to be firing. So that happens very, very focused for a man, yet kind of all over the place for a woman.
Which is kind of, that is why we say we can multitask and
mm-hmm.
why men can't. And again, generalization, and we're not going to keep apologizing for this because we're just not. But that is, and if you think about the millennia of years that we have built this brain, women were gatherers, we were talking at the same time, we were socializing, we were taking care of kids, we were all of these things at once. Men were focused on,
the hunt and the kill.
Yeah, saber-toothed tiger this way.
Yeah, very focused, very, very specific while we're home sweeping the cave. So that, and that is, you know, the stereotype. I love it because it's so, in so many ways, it's so true. We're very good at being able to read things around us, which was part of what we'll talk about in our intuition model. We read the environment around us. And men are good at driving down, making a decision, and getting it done. So that's a part of the research that has come into play that helps validate this whole, why would we even treat men and women differently? I've gotten some pushback from one particular colleague of mine that's in the industry as well, and she said, I think it's way dangerous to be identifying a woman does this and a man does that. I think that's horrible. And she's perfectly entitled to her opinion and whatever philosophy she has in consulting around this, but I just disagree.
But what you and stick with us on this, because what we're going to talk about is those things that make a woman a great leader are innate. They're within us. They are not something we have to change. We don't have to model ourselves after a man's behavior. So stick with us on this, because there are those who say, well, there's no difference. And we know there are differences, and it doesn't have to be. I mean, I've taken on some very male traits just to get to where I am in business. Mm-hmm. And so
in some environments, it becomes taboo to talk about.
Right.
But I don't know if they think it's going to create a touchiness, or people are going to get sensitive about it or what. But it ends up getting buried, which kind of brings us to some of the...
Well, a great book on this is called Leadership in the Sexes.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're wondering about the whole brain program and all of that, grab hold of that book and read it. It's really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Authored Gurian, Gurian.
Yes.
One of the two. By the way, our book online, for those of you that have searched it out, is on Amazon, and there are two versions. The initial edition might pop up first if you search Amazon for Skirt Strategies, and it's got a blue cover with clouds. The one you'll want is the one that Carol has co-authored with on the second edition. So let's talk about statistics.
Go.
Okay. Here's what we know for sure. There's some fascinating statistics, and just since the last 2 years when Skirt Strategies, the first edition, first came out, I looked back at my notes from talking with you, Megan, and I thought, wow, we've learned, there's so much more that has evolved in this since just those 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Has it been just 2 years? And, you know, the old statement I'm sure most of your audience will appreciate, when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we started looking for it and it started popping up, but there are clear clear evidence within research from people like McKinsey and Company, who does global surveys, Deloitte,
Catalyst,
a nonprofit women's research group, and some things that they're finding in a business environment, in any sort of a work environment. They've identified from 101 companies worldwide that there are 9 business driver factors, things that really work well for a business. And those are things like work environment and values, coordination and control, direction, innovation, external orientation, which is focusing on your customers or the people that are your consumers. In many cases, it could be a student if you're in the academia. Those organizations with 3 or more women in their top management scored higher in every single one of those 9. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Down in the level, what about, so that's work environment and factors. What about at the personal level? Types of leadership behavior, what shows leadership? When Carol and I talk about leadership, we're not talking about somebody that's at a CEO level or an exec level or mid-management or even a supervisor. We're talking about the natural illustration of leadership regardless of where you are in an organization, which is influencing others. The types of leadership that McKinsey identified, there were 9 that were conducive to organizational performance. And they were things like people development, role modeling. In fact, as I say these, you can kind of hear the women versus the men in it. People development, role modeling, inspiring, expectations and rewards, participative decision making. All the that's 5 of them. Mm-hmm. Let me give you 2 more that let me give you all 9. Intellectual stimulation, efficient communication, individual decision making, and control and corrective action. Okay, so those are the 9 characteristics. Those first 5, women deploy more readily than men do. It's more natural for them.
Right.
Two of them, intellectual stimulation and efficient communication, men and women deploy. And then two of the nine, and it's not a race, I know, but only two of the nine men scored higher in, and those are very clear in men, individual decision-making, control, and corrective action. The point being, all of these are great to have, and a balance of them is terrific to have. If you have a male-dominated work environment, aren't you more likely to be a little bit tilted in one way?
Right.
Controlling and not as embracing as if it were balanced.
And as maybe the workplace of today needs to be. So maybe a workplace of yesteryear had to be more command and control, but today's workplace, we're working with other folks, and we need to inspire them and lead them. We're not just asking them to clock in and put widgets together.
It's more about people.
It's more about people and relationships. And I just wanted to mention that there's a couple of research papers on our website under Hot Flash, and then there's research, and then there's also in Skirt News. I just put up a new study done by Zinger and Spolkman, a study in leadership, Women Do It Better Than Men. And they've got 16 leadership characteristics, including sales, marketing, customer service, operations, HR training, general management, and on and on. And of those 16, women rated higher in 12. And again, it's not a race, but it's nice to know that our leadership characteristics that we deploy naturally are being looked at as this is what we want in our company.
Mm-hmm.
So we want you to embrace that. We want you to say, yes, I knew this at some innate level that what I was doing was right, that because I wasn't necessarily looking like a man in everything I did, what I was doing is correct, and what I am doing is correct. So embrace that with us, and we'll talk a little bit more about it.
Now for those of you that are in any sort of a retail that has to do with a consumer product, women make 80% of the decisions, half of the decisions about computers, about 80% of all consumer products. They make more of a decision about cars, blah, blah, and it goes on and on. So in that case, and if you are in a consumer industry, why wouldn't you want a lot of representation of women in the decision-making roles?
Well, and then we know that in academics, in academia, more women are getting degrees than men now.
Women outnumbered men in PhDs. In 2010, for the first time in history.
Wow.
So what are we doing with it? We go back, we go into a work environment, a business environment of any sort, where you're getting paid, you know, to think and influence others. And this is where it goes from fascinating to a little bit depressing. This is actually the why, you know, so it's kind of the so what of the fascinating. In 2011, you all may have heard these statistics. Actually, in 2010, the workforce tipped from majority of men to majority of women for the first time, so 51% of the workforce in the United States. In 2011, of 500 CEOs at the Fortune 500 company, that's 500 CEOs, guess how many were women?
We can't hear them.
I know. I was looking at that was a rhetorical question. 11.
That's not good.
11. And actually, it was down from the highest that we saw it ever was in 2010 at 15. And it had cropped up because in 1995 there was only one.
So
that's
we were trending upwards, and now we're trending backwards again.
And,
only
you know, there have been interesting studies also related to universities, and I can't pull the statistics out of my brain right now, but I know that not only are there not very many women at the very top of universities, but there's also, of course, clearly a difference in whether it's women of color or not. So it isn't just companies. It's also other kinds of institutions.
Sure. Well, Megan, 47% of statistics are made up on the spot.
Well, there you go.
78% of people believe them whether they're accurate or not. So just come up with something.
I know I should have, so.
Except you're being recorded, so you'll be tested on it later.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think this audience would check me.
They would.
I bet.
28% of companies, and we'll stop with the statistics in a little while, but this is just validation around what's happening. 28% of companies make gender diversity a priority. That's good, because I know a lot of bigger organizations have a diversity and inclusion, they call it D&I, diversity and inclusion initiative, and even those that we've had interaction with, they have it as initiative, but they haven't figured out, it's not working. They're trying
right.
to put women in the pipeline for leadership, and they're either burning out or they're acting like, I've heard this, especially in technical industries, well, they get promoted, then they start acting differently. And in many cases, they start acting like a man, and it completely backfires because it's not natural. And everybody hates them because they sense an ingenuity that's ingenuineness. It's not ingenuity.
Disingenuous.
A disingenuous. Yeah. Thank you. That's the word. And that they're deploying, and it's not quite, you know, it's not quite working.
It's not,
well.
Yeah. It's not why they were promoted in the first place. They were promoted because they were good people managers, and then or they had good skills with people. They get promoted, and then they start acting like something different.
Yeah, yeah. And women come up to me all the time and say, "What about those women that backstab to get at others?" You know, and I'm like, I have been fortunate enough not to have seen that very directly. But I hear a lot of people say that women start acting like, you know, the bitchy woman in order to get what she wants. Forget the term, but that's the best description for it. And we don't want to go there. We don't want that to happen. We want to be collaborative
supportive.
And supportive of one
yeah.
another.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's just one more item that I think is interesting. If you took the Fortune 500 again and you stacked it from top to bottom, not based on how much earnings they had, but on return of equity,
profits, equity,
return of equity
yeah.
results, which would be revenue based or bottom line based. The top quartile, the top fourth of that 500, has more women in it than the other three fourths.
And that would be women
in
the leadership and on the board.
I think it's in executive leadership or senior leadership and above.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily cause and effect, but there's. And somebody has asked me, well, is it cause and effect, or is it that these companies are more open and forward, they're leaning
forward
so they're
thinking.
More likely
yeah.
to have, and that also makes a bottom line. I don't know, you know, but I think it's a really good indication that it's a good thing to have women in your leadership for lots of different reasons.
And another study that is on our website is with PACS, what is the name of it? Gender equity as an investment concept. This was written by Joe Keith, who's the president and CEO of PACS World Management. It was written in 2011. He talks about how important it is to get women in those senior management positions for his company. And, you know, if you want to believe him, he's managed it, and he sees the reasoning behind anybody needing to balance their workforce.
Here's another rhetorical question. Okay, now let's start talking about behaviors, and let's take this into our model, which we take. You've heard of several different characteristics here. We have 16 that we've pulled out through the research that we've conglomerated into what we feel are the 16 that we experience most directly. And so we'll go to that. But based on that behavior, the behavior of women doing these things, what do you think is the percentage of men that think that a woman needs to act like a man at work in order to be taken seriously?
So think about that. Everybody write down a number. Because
and mail it to us. that would be inane. All right. Percentage of men that think a woman needs to act like a man
at work.
We're on,
in case people are following along in the handouts, we're on page 3.
We're on page 3. Thank you. So the answer to that, and this comes from a Time magazine additionally,
poll.
It's about a year and a half ago, I think, a poll. The answer is 30%. So a third of men, and then I don't think that's very, very great. That's not real optimistic. A third of men are going to look at me and think I need to act like
a man in order to be taken seriously.
Yeah,
yeah. So
that's depressing.
So let's just dump them, that
okay,
third,
let's, so let's
and
ask,
let's take the rest of them. But here's the even more interesting question is the percentage of women that think a woman needs to act like a man at work in order to be taken seriously.
Well, you think that'd be nil,
right?
Or low, wouldn't you?
5%, 10%.
If I would ask you, you'd say we absolutely do not have to act like a man. We can do it. But most women, or many women, don't think that way. In fact, 25% think that you need to act like a man at work in order to be taken seriously. So,
well, and without reading the article, I mean, so this is very interesting, and it's also the kind of thing you think, okay, well, what is it? How are they defining act like a man? You know, what does that mean?
Yeah.
So that's what I would be interested in is going into the research to find out what was it that people were holding? You know, was it the way that they acted, the way that they dressed, the way that they spoke? You know, what
and
all
just
was in
to
their
say,
head?
Anecdotally, yeah, and anecdotally, I mean, I have managed many women, and I have moved many women into management positions, and it's interesting. When I move them up, in order to take charge, you know, because they've been working with the same people for a while, and now they're in a management position, in order to take charge, in many instances, they did the command and control.
They changed.
You will do this. You will act like this, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and out of no fault of their own, out of no, just for lack of a good role model, possibly. But that was the, I think that's kind of where this is coming from, and I understand what you're saying,
mm-hmm.
Megan. What do they mean by that? But I've seen it many times, and it's always surprised
mm-hmm.
me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, and that's where I think that what you all are sharing is going to be helpful for folks, because if people haven't seen or they don't know how to capitalize on other strengths and talents that they have, then they go into a default of sort of following, oh, well, this must be what I need to do.
Right. This is what management looks like,
well,
or this is what leadership
looks like. And
that's
why role modeling and mentoring is so important. Those of us, Carol and I are both baby boomers, and she's a lot older than I am. She's like 9 months older than I am. But the baby boomers, we didn't have a parent in the workforce. Well, we had a parent in the workforce. We didn't have a female role model in the workforce in general. It was our dad. My dad was a great role model as a businessman, and he ran his own company. But he's a man. And so when I think of here's how you behave in a business environment,
I
think of somebody like him, or I think of somebody that I would have worked for, which in my background, which was very technical, was always a man. So the role modeling should not be understated, because a role model is simply, this is the way you do it. It's a very subtle yet strong message around, this is the way that you do it. If you don't have somebody that you can look at, whether she thinks she's a role model or not, and see her doing it well, then you kind of, it's hard to get.
You have to imagine
it yourself. So that's why we're big on mentoring, and we're big on seeing the demand from the 20 and 30-somethings to skirt strategies is give us mentoring. Give us role modeling. Tell us how you did the work-life balance, which is interesting that they think we did it, so we just pretend we did. But it's looking
good. We lie.
But we muddled through it, and we're probably the first generation that has been much more prevalent in the workplace. And then, you know, another generation from now will be even more. So let's move forward to something. Let's look at page 4, your observation skills. Page 4 on your handout. Now, there's a little illustration of your day there, something very typical for many of us. We can't underestimate the importance of getting ready, because for women, it's, you know, if you have a bad hair day, or your stockings just aren't fitting on you real right, or your shoes are hurting, it affects much of the rest of your world, and it can affect feeling like, you know, I'm not put together today, I want to look good. It's, you know, you just want to feel good about yourself. So it starts off, your day starts off with how you're managing yourself and your own leadership from getting ready. For a man, it's very, this is where the focus comes in again. For a man, it's a career, his work is his career, and he kind of turns on and off between home and work. Whereas a woman is a much more holistic thinker. Her job is not just about a career. It's usually about a bigger purpose and a meaning, and how what you're doing in your job is a part of your satisfaction to giving back to
the greater society.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So that's why the morning, even though I'm kind of silly to be talking about curling your hair, that's why getting ready is really a part of setting the pace for your day. So I'm going to tell a story, and I'm going to illustrate what it might be like getting ready driving to work, going to a meeting, interacting with others, so that we can put into play the 16 feminine leadership skills. I can give you a visualization of what that looks like in action. So here's the story. It's a typical day. You're getting your hair ready. You're feeling pretty good because you've got a good, you're having a good hair day. You know, thumbs up. Okay, thumbs up. You get to work. It's an uneventful drive to work. You get there. You've got an office or wherever it is that you kind of hang out, and you'd like to settle in, sit down, and check on your email. But unfortunately today, you've got to meet with somebody important, either a colleague or some clients down the hall and in a conference room. So instead of, you know, being able to get to all these loose items that are undone at your desk, you're a little afraid that you didn't get all that done, but you're okay. You know, it's okay. You like your outfit, and it's a good hair day. So you think, it's okay, I'll come back to my desk later. Let's just go to this meeting. You walk into the meeting, and people are just now gathering, and the first thing you notice is that this client, whoever might be in visiting, this client is looking for something to stir his coffee. And you help by jumping up immediately, going over the coffee counter because you know right where the stir sticks are, and you hand one to him, and he smiles warmly at you, thank you. You state something about how well this group works together, and especially when it requires that everybody have their daily coffee. You know, it's kind of a joke about we've got to have coffee in order to think. And then he says something like, well, somebody as pretty as you can work on my team anytime. Now,
yikes.
Now, men are, this doesn't happen all the time, but this has happened to me. And I've had somebody say, oh, I'd rather hear the pretty one talk than you guys. You know, that's okay. I mean, it's not appropriate, but it happens, and it happens in some situations.
And there's no reason to hang on to it and let it bother you.
No.
You know? I mean, you certainly can if you want, but you know, what's more important, hanging on to that one comment and letting it drag down your day or letting it go and realizing that he's a little inappropriate. But
right, which is a sign of a mature woman is to be able to say, well, you know, you're a little thrown by it, but you know at the heart of it, it's a support. He's trying to be supportive, but he's just not quite knowing how to do it. Maybe he doesn't work around women much. So you sense that intent was maybe to be supportive back, and that's just the way it is. So you write it off as harmless. To send a quick message to the team, because there's others listening in and they're thinking, And you don't want the client to feel uncomfortable about what he just said, so you make a statement kind of to bail him out, something about how your company has always been forward-looking about the importance of working together. And then Johnny, who's in the room, Johnny makes a mean coffee cake, and you state that we often drink our coffee with Johnny's coffee cake. So you've diverted the focus to the wider group. Good move. You top it off with an inspiring statement about how using that sense of teaming to cover the progress report. Now, so let's get to work now. So you kind of have transitioned
into it.
You've segued into it. And let's start talking about action items. So the sense of the room kind of changes. You know, people kind of settle in. They start looking at the handouts, and you can feel the energy shift. They get a little more serious, and you get down to business. Then after several minutes, so you guys know what it's like to be in a meeting where it starts droning on.
Yeah.
I call it a painful meeting. So after a while, this guy named Robert starts droning on, and he's dominating with some story about an incident on the job site. And you're thinking, oh, well, you sense that the room is starting to get fidgety, and they're losing focus. And you see that as stuck in the weeds. So you take the initiative. You jump in. And you think, what am I going to do to kind of get this group going again? So you ask Rebecca. Let's bring somebody else in as well. You ask Rebecca if she knows about what Robert was talking about and what happened with this, quote, incident. And it's enough to break Robert's tempo. And the group is a little shot in the arm.
Includes some other folks in the conversation.
And includes Rebecca. And Rebecca's a young person, and she's kind of new. In meetings like that, you know how it is when people are relatively new or they're the apprentice. They don't get airtime at all. They kind of just, you know, they're seen as low on the totem pole. So you listen to what's happening for a while, and Rebecca chats for just a bit, and now you're sensing, and this will be the end of the story because this could, like any day
drone
at work,
on.
This could go on and on. you kind of are sensing now that what Rebecca is saying is starting to concern the client because she's talking about an incident. So you jump in, you undermine the incident, you say you put it in perspective in some way, and then you grab a pen and a flip chart, and you start jotting down some action items to move the group forward. Okay? Good. Kind of a typical snapshot
of a typical day. And maybe
a typical day.
Maybe you're in academia, but still, it's a meeting.
it's a typical day for a
exactly.
woman. Yeah.
Well, and I mean the same kind of thing can happen. I mean that with it doesn't matter whether it's students, colleagues,
you're working with groups in the community.
You know? I mean this happens sort of regardless of people's roles.
Exactly. That's exactly the point. Because leadership is about self-management and influencing what's happening around you. It's not about where you are in the totem pole,
right,
or in the hierarchy,
right,
whatever the term might be. So let's analyze that just a little bit, because if you think about that story, and let's say that it's a man that it happens to. If he gets hit on by another man at work, that would be odd. But let's say that it's, you know, much of that situation is a man. It's just they handle it differently. And I think we forget to see that. Not wrong, but different. So flip to your handouts on page 7. And if you don't have your handout in front of you, that's okay. It is our intuition model that has those 16 female leadership traits. And they're in a model that puts it into quadrants based on people or situations and sensing or doing. Those four. So it's not quite as mutually exclusive as you would think. There's a lot of overlap. But in general, we've put them into these pockets of areas that kind of illustrate what are you doing when you are doing that self-management and the influencing, what happens. And it begins with acting with others or reading others in our story. So let me step through what happened in that meeting. I'm not going to make this painfully detailed. But in general, what happened is you walked in and he needed a stir stick. You know, a man, I'm sorry for the generalization again, but a man would kind of be clueless to that, whereas a woman is more service-minded. And we'd see, oh, he needs a stir stick. Let me jump up and get it. We're good at that. What a nice thing to have in the room.
So therefore, we're in that upper left-hand quadrant, right?
That's the
exactly. We're sensing intent. We're sensing, oh my gosh, he's sitting there without a stir stick and has creamer at the bottom of his coffee cup.
Right.
Let me just help out with
that. Let's
just
help out.
Yeah.
Then you state something about how this group works really well together, which is acting. So we flipped over to the upper right hand. We're inspiring or we're building a relationship. We're doing something. Then we flip back over to the reading others. You can see we're going back and forth between sensing and doing, which is kind of how we go through our day. Then he says something about being pretty, and you're sensing the intent. You're not, you know, I guess you could get a little spun up, but most women, you know, with any sort of emotional intelligence know, I wonder what he intended.
And you know, even if he intended something inappropriate, I'm not going to acknowledge that here, and I'm not going to let it take this meeting
somewhere
in a different direction. I'm going to work through this
and
bring it up later if I think it's that important.
Right, exactly. Kind of let it slide for now. And in fact, you let him off the hook. So you switch back over to the acting with others because you say something. You want to send a message to the team, and you don't want to make the client feel like, oh, gosh, you've just made a horrible guffaw. So you say something about how we work together as a team. Great. Then we get into the lower left, which is reading situations. Everyone starts looking at the task for the day, the task that's happening in the meeting. And that's when Robert starts to drone on. So you jump in and invite.
And you're reading that everybody else is fidgeting and...
That's the sensing undercurrent. Thank you for clarifying that. That's of reading situations, that's the sensing an undercurrent and keeping a perspective of, well, I don't think we want to go down this rabbit trail. This meeting is about something else. So you jump in, which is the acting on situations, the lower right-hand corner, by involving others.
Right.
And you've involved Rebecca being low man on the totem pole, which is social equity.
Right.
So here I'm looking at, this is part of what is interesting about social equity with women. Women in general do not, they respect the hierarchy, but they generally look at people as people, not as where they are on an org chart. We're more, it's more of a sensing type thing around who you are and what you do and what your intent is, not necessarily what authority or position you carry.
Right.
Although that we consider that. I mean, we'd be crazy not to, but it's not all about hierarchy. We call that social equity. And then the last piece of this meeting, you feel it has to do with the intent, and you're kind of sensing that the client might be seeing it too wrong, so you go back up to sensing intent and empathizing with him. you say something to him about, I can see how you might think this might be a difficult incident, know that we're working on it, blah, 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 which is empathy. And the last thing you do is the planning, which you jump up, and that's acting on situations. You jump up and you take some notes.
Initiative and start the planning around that, yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Rather than letting everybody continue to drone on and pick this thing to death, move it, you know, let's start planning. Let's plan how we're going to do this different.
Right.
So that situation doesn't come up again.
Right. So that's, I hope that makes sense to everyone, but that's in kind of a nutshell of an illustration, that's what our leadership looks like. And, you know, there's all the other overlays of leadership models that are more, you know, not gender specific, kind of overlay that. Because when we make decisions, we do it with an empathizing and a collaboration. When we plan, we do it with a different mindset than a man does. So it's not that it can stand alone. There still has to be good leadership competencies, but it's that we have this way of looking at it that is just different.
It is. And it's finally getting to the point where companies and people are appreciating not just the differences, but where we're bringing people. So we take them from this relationship management. We're managing relationships. We're bringing people into the decision making process. That's another, and I don't know where we have that in this, but just think about how women make decisions. We
mm-hmm.
make decisions by bringing people into our decision making process. We build a team around a decision making. And not always, but in a lot of times we do. And that is, you know, sometimes can be looked at by men as vacillating.
Well, that's a perfect example of something else that happens as an illustration. And being myself being often in a male-dominated work environment, like I know many of you that are listening are, you tend to kind of do things the way things are getting done around here.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you're a minority, it's usually the way the men are doing it. And so the message we send ourselves is, well, if I do something in an inclusive way, or if I empathize, empathy doesn't belong in the workplace,
right.
Or if I use some emotion, you know, without being blubbering, but I use some emotion, that's not the way the rest of this group would do it. Therefore, maybe I just kind of bury it.
Right.
Women are compromising their strengths when they do that. So my challenge to the listeners is to, whatever environment you're in, your first challenge is simply awareness.
Notice.
Are you doing that? When are times where you feel like, many times it's an uphill battle and you don't want to take that risk? You're like, oh, I'm just going to go along with the group because I'm going to look completely like a weird duck if I do something. But little by little, you start pushing back on it a little bit, or you start testing the waters for, what if I do what feels more comfortable to me? An example of that, I was in a meeting with probably 7 or 8 men, almost all, it was a technical environment, almost all engineers, but they were pretty high up, they were at management level, and I listened to them, there was some posturing going on.
Mm-hmm.
There was some ego, it was called, what a friend of mine calls engineering tennis, where one man says, yeah, but my department, blah, blah, blah. And another guy says, yeah, but the radars are most important because blah, blah, blah. You know, it's this,
right.
And it's kind of like, no, you guys, we're not talking about how important you are. We're talking about the problem at hand. So I pushed back on it just a little bit. And I said, now, you guys have been talking for about 10 minutes about this and this. And what I've heard is very myopic about your own area.
Right.
Can I challenge you guys, if you're going to contribute to the airtime, to have it be something that is conducive to something
working
that'll
together.
Work for all of us.
Ah.
They looked at me like I had a third eye going out of my forehead. I mean, and I thought, oh, God, what have I done? And at first, you know, if somebody else were looking in on it, they'd be saying, no, no, no. They needed
timing,
that.
Perfect thing to
they
say.
Absolutely
right.
Needed that. But when you're in the throes of it, it's uncomfortable.
Sure.
You're feeling very outnumbered. Rosa Beth Moss Cantor is – go ahead, Megan.
No, all I was going to say is, I mean, what a fabulous thing to say. Very clear and exactly why – I mean, I think it would be part of why you had been brought in there is because people needed to move forward. And if we don't speak up, even when it's really scary, then – you know, the posturing continues, or the whole project doesn't move forward, or the culture stays exactly the way that it is. And I think this is really one of the areas where, because we do sense what's going on, and to go ahead and be able to formulate our words, I think what you said was fabulous.
Well, and if you think about it, I mean, think about a negotiation situation where you've got just your team as a group of men going into a negotiation. You miss half of the sensing the undercurrents and everything else that's going on in that room because you don't have a woman on your side. And, you know, men will posture in a negotiation.
They'll focus on the bottom line.
Absolutely. But they will not look at what's happening to the other people, and you know, in the negotiation. So, and I think the book that made that observation was that Leadership in the Sexes, about taking women with you
mm-hmm.
into a negotiation. How interesting is that? Because we're empathizing with the other people. Well, you know, it looks like they don't feel like this is a win-win. Maybe we should do it some
mm-hmm.
other way.
Mm-hmm.
So
I worked in an office, a civilian office within the Air Force. Of course, it had some military in it, too. And the woman that was at the top level, which was at a general equivalent level, she was a civilian, but she was an SES, which is what would be a general. She ran the Monday morning staff meetings, and there was one meeting where she got a little edgy over something. Somebody had reported a status on something, and she was thinking, no, it should be farther along, and she pushed back on it just a little bit. In the hallway afterwards, I heard two men going, man, Judy was really irritated. And I went, really, is that what you saw? And they said, oh, yeah, she was just about to blow. And I thought, God, I didn't see that at all. I saw completely where she was going. I thought she stayed composed. She wanted to push back on something, and she did it in a very self-contained, appropriate way. And they saw it as, oh, she's about to lose it. It just made me think, man, we're speaking, you know, the Venus and Mars thing, we're speaking two different
mm-hmm.
languages, and there's a huge lesson in this, which is not just that awareness, we women need to be more aware, but also how do we help men understand? Because they'll be the
yeah.
first ones to say, I'm clueless. to claim themselves clueless. They'll be the first one to say, I don't understand you women. And it's not that they're stupid, it's that they haven't been shown the difference. So we have training just for men in it alone, because that's, you know, an adaptation that they would like to hear.
Right. Well, and you do need to be trained to appreciate certain things from certain people. I mean, there's all, not just the diversity training, but the, you know, personality training and personality,
mm-hmm.
You know, looking at those different things. This is kind of the same thing. I mean,
mm-hmm.
why wouldn't you love to have somebody on your team that was great at sensing and empathizing and having social equity and building relationships? You want that that person on your team. And if it means that you have more women on your team, then why wouldn't you?
Right. Right,
so.
And that negotiating thing, it's have you ever walked out of a meeting and said to somebody else, maybe it's a man, and said, you know, did you see how she didn't buy into that at all, or did you see how he did not like it when we started talking about XYZ? And I've done that before, and the other person will say, no.
Didn't even know.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
So we pick up on different things that are very valuable. Rosabeth Moss Kanter is out of Harvard Business School. I'm sure many of you have heard of her. She had a study regarding what happens in organizations, actually in any situation when there's a minority. And boy, with all the academics on the line, I hope I
get this,
give
right.
this justice. in her study or white paper, whatever the research was, she had identified as some tipping point where a minority starts to get a voice, whether it's, you know, the black children in the church, in the Sunday school class, or whether it's the women that are in the work meeting, or whatever it might be, a minority in a bigger environment. And her research said 30%. At 30%, you start to be seen as a significant voice. And a great example of that is the Supreme Court with 9 justices. And Sandra Day O'Connor, when she became the first, what was, you know, it was revolutionary because she was the first.
Right.
And it was a big, big event. And then there was the second, and then there was the third, and now I think Kagan's been the last one that's been on, or Sotomayor. And there's either three or four now, so it's over 30%. It's just not an issue anymore. It's just it's great. It's now nice, diverse, balanced group of nine people. That's often what we need to look at when we're talking about gender equity in the workplace, gender balance. Is, I mean, women don't want to rule the world, but we sure need some environment where there's a voice that's not just a beep in the background. Let's talk about the 16
characteristics.
Traits.
Okay, we've mentioned most of them through the story and other things, but just so you're clear, the 16 leadership traits
are on page five,
and I'll just go over them and kind of give you a background on what we think they are.
And then let me just say what you can do as we're going through these is those of you that saw the pre-work about the assessment,
mm-hmm.
The online assessment takes these 16 and on a scale of 1 to 5 on the online version. On a scale of 1 to 5, you just self-rate. So it's, you know, kind of a quick and dirty, where do I think I am? And there's, of course, a little bit of style denial there if you think you're one thing and you really are seen as something else. But of the 16, you self-rate. That website is assessmyskills.com. With it, you'll get a report that immediately that shows which of those four quadrants that we were talking about,
right,
which one of those four you fall into. And you automatically get on our email list, too, which is very clever of us, and now we can track you down. but that's a great way to get the free tip monthly from Skirt Strategies, too, if that interests you.
Well, and I'm sure that a lot of women have already done this because I've seen a lot come through lately. But if you haven't, do this. It will give you an idea of where your strengths are, and we are proponents of working toward your strengths, not necessarily looking at your weaknesses and trying to do something with those, but really work to your strengths. So here are the characteristics, and they start with listening. You are good at listening for facts and data, sensing intent. This means you're good at sensing intent from others. Empathizing, you appropriately pick up on and reflect feelings that others have, letting them know you understand. God, women are better at this.
yeah.
Sensing undercurrents, you're good at reading nonverbal signs, and a lot of research shows that women are better at sensing undercurrents and interpreting. Interpreting means that you're good at translating what you hear into needs for others. Keeping perspective, you have a way of recognizing what's important in life, and you can put work into perspective. That would be that work-life balance thing that we're still trying to manage.
Mm-hmm.
Big picture thinking, you have a broad contextual view of issues important when developing strategies.
So those seven that you just mentioned,
mm-hmm,
are all the ones that are sensing. Those are all the ones that are on the left side of our model, the first three being about reading others and the second four being about reading situations. And that's, to me, really where women excel. The other half that you're going to run down,
mm-hmm,
is the doing,
mm-hmm,
which sometimes is a little more learned than natural because you got to take initiative. But that sensing, to me, is that's the difference between women and men. Okay, keep going.
Collaborative mindset. You exhibit few competitive tendencies and often seek a more collaborative approach, and that was part of what I was talking about, team building and making decisions around teams and asking other people. Inspiring, you motivate others and get them inspired. Mediating, you have the ability to smoothly insert yourself into situations where conflict management or problem solving is needed. That's not always easy for women. I know it's not very easy for me.
Mm.
Building relationships, you clearly see relationship building as an important fact, as important as fact gathering. But you clearly see that building relationships is part of your leadership style.
Do you think that gets labeled on us sometimes as being social?
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the women are being chatty and they're chatting it up. And
yeah, and I think that, I mean, I think that would be important for people to distinguish. Because there are so many ways to build relationships. And It doesn't have to be in a group, and it doesn't have to be particularly chatty at all. It's just getting to know other people and what is it that makes them tick or what's important to them or, I mean, all kinds
what
of things.
What motivates them to come to work every day and be productive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's important. That is so important in our work lives today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, you think about it, we're not making widgets. You know, back then it wasn't about relationships and people and team building. It was about coming in, clocking in, and making a widget. Now it's about building those relationships so that people are inspired to work and be productive in a company and come to work every day.
Well, it's interesting because just this morning someone had emailed me about a work situation, and this is somebody who is at a university, and there's a culture within a segment of the university that is just not about moving some things forward and not about seeing the importance of all kinds of, you know, what I think many of us would agree would be important at a university. And the question was, you know, how am I going to get this group to move or to change? And I had quite a few comments, but one of them was that I encouraged her to use her not inconsiderable skill in building relationships. I said, I think this is going to be a one person at a time kind
mm-hmm.
of shift.
Conversation, right.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I see that difference in the way a woman would do that versus a man all the time. And this kind of brings to mind that what I think is really fascinating, which is what are the specific situations where a man sees something completely different than a woman and it's to a woman's disadvantage. That's one of the reasons Skirt Strategies was created is to give women these tactics that so on the spot they can be looking for it. And this one about the way that we relate, I've been with fellow women and chatting.
Fellow women?
That does not sound right, does it? They should have a female version of that fellow. Other women, and a colleague man walks by and makes some comment. I mean, he thought he was being cute and flirty, but some comment about, oh, you women always, you know,
going to the bathroom together.
Yeah, or a bunch of hens in the yard. And I understood what he was coming from, but he was wrong.
Right.
It's that he's not seeing what's actually happening there. He's seeing it as superficial chatting, socializing that has to do with going to a party together or something. I don't know.
Right. Not productive. He's not seeing that as productive.
Yeah.
But you as a manager or a leader may see it as very productive to talk to somebody about their family and their family because that gets them interested. You can then ask them those personal questions when, you know something's happened in their life. And it makes a difference to people coming to work every day.
Yeah. You know, there. I wonder, and I'll let you continue with your list in a minute, but I keep having these insights of brilliance. I wonder how different it is or how valuable it is to be seen sometimes in those relationships as kind of a mother role. And I don't mean mothering the men that we're with, but I've been in environments where the male-dominated workforce didn't relate to me until I had done some of that empathizing,
mm-hmm.
and then they felt like, okay, now I know how to talk to her because it's like talking to my mom. Not that
right.
I was older, but I don't know where I'm going with this other than I wonder, .. does it help to break that barrier of the conversation by socializing with men because now they start to see you as a different way to relate?
Well, and it's interesting. I just the other day met with a woman. She has this insurance company, and the people that were working with her in this situation were men, and you could see her kind of mothering the whole thing along. She owns a huge insurance company, and she mothers this company along. That's how she's seen leadership. And that's how she's doing leadership. It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that most of the men that I was looking at were kind of seeing her as a mother figure to be taken seriously.
Yeah.
There's
probably downsides of that.
Yeah.
But I think if it opens a door and a man can relate to it, maybe it's okay. Maybe we'll hear some questions about that.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't tend to mother people along very much, but I do build relationships. Anyway. Moving on, Katie, planning. You have the ability to balance the strategic, the what, with the tactical, the how. I think women are fabulous at planning,
oh my God,
and especially detail planning. But going on. Multitasking. You have a natural tendency to deal comfortably between multiple tasks. Obviously, you know, and there's a lot of controversy in the whole multitasking thing. Can you really multitask? I'm personally not very good at it. I don't do anything well when I don't focus a little bit more on one thing than another. But I do think about a lot of things all at once.
Uh-huh.
And I don't sleep because I'm always thinking.
Right.
But,
that's bad. Blood flow in your brain.
Uh-huh.
How can it be seen by a man?
Multitasking?
Mm-hmm.
Confused.
Yeah. Scattered.
Scattered. Yes.
Ditzy. All over the place.
So moving on. Social equity, you look at the workplace in terms of a network of contacts rather than rank and status, and we've talked about that. Involving others, you pull in others' inputs before setting plans and strategies, again, involving others in decision-making. And emotional intelligence, you have a high self-awareness and acknowledgement of feelings. I want to say something here. I know a lot of you are sitting there going, yes, but men do this too. Yes, but men do that too. I know that. And again, the generalizations, what we're trying to do is get women to embrace their leadership qualities so that they don't have to do it in the command and control method that we've so often seen. So it's not about, yes, but men do this and women, I mean, we all have some of these talents across the board.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're trying to do is really get you to embrace the fact that yes, we have great leadership qualities as women, and we can use those that are natural and inherent to us.
Mm-hmm.
So just want to make that point
again. Great list. Thank you for sharing that. And it has more of an implication if you are prone to questioning your self-confidence or a little bit of fear around, you know, the courage that it sometimes takes. If you know, there's some women that are just like, well, I'm not wimpy in that way at all. I will tell somebody what I think. But from, I say most of us, there's always this, there's always a sense of self-doubt that can happen, especially when you're a minority. The self-doubt will come into play, and you will be more likely to bury this stuff faster. So know that that's natural. But know that that's also something that you may have to do a little fake it to make it. There may be some times where you need to just kind of jump in and say, no, I'm okay doing it this way. You know, if somebody questions you on the way you're doing it, you just got to stick with it, and what's the worst thing that can happen?
Right.
I think you run a bigger risk by backing down than you do by looking confident and firm and being wrong later.
I think we did a series, Megan, in miniskirts that was about decision-making and
mm-hmm.
and how women are not necessarily comfortable with decision-making. But part of it was make the decision and move forward because it's not brain surgery. And if it is brain surgery, then know what you're doing.
Well, and I think part of it is it's the being questioned. So it isn't so much that, I mean, in many situations we are able to make a decision and then either the gremlin starts in and starts saying, oh, you know, Francine is going to be mad that you decided to do this, or
right.
Frank is, you know, this isn't what he suggested. And so we start having all these gremlins, and then let alone if we go ahead and, I mean, the decision then gets out there and somebody starts to question it, and it feeds into what we were already worried about. And then I think that's when we either we backpedal or, you know, we flip.
We get in fear of the decision we've made.
Right.
And that's natural. You know, work with it, live with it. I think men probably have the same sort of thing. But and as you do it more and more, as you make decisions more and more, you realize that it's not permanent. You know, if it needs adjusting up here, you can do that. But there's usually a lot of folks in your line of command that are waiting for you to make that decision. And once you make it, again, you can change a little bit later, but they're waiting for you to make the decision, or they can't go on with being productive in some of the things they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So don't be so afraid of it. Make the decision. Come back later. And the more you do it, the more comfortable you're going to be with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, we did promise to talk a little bit about EQ, which is the emotional equivalent of IQ. And, EQ is to emotion as IQ is to intelligence. And we also call that emotional intelligence sometimes. So if you haven't heard the term, that's simply what we're talking about. And men and women both have generally about the same. We tend to think of women as being higher in emotion, but there's not that big of a difference. In the study that I saw, women were slightly higher, but it wasn't really statistically significant. But listen to these four pieces, and I don't want to go into this because I'm not a huge expert in EQ to where I can speak at length for it, but I do know that what it tells us in its basic model is so rivetingly important to making all the other 15 pieces work, which is why we have it in the center of our model. And this comes from the father of EQ, who we know as Daniel Goleman, danielgoleman.com, if you ever want to do any research from him. His books are terrific. The four pieces, he's changed this model a little bit over the years, but the four pieces are, listen to these, self-awareness, managing our emotions, empathy, and social skills. Self-awareness being the ability to recognize emotions and reactions in yourself as well as their effect on others. I think maturity has a lot to do with this. If you think about how much better you are at managing that now, bringing an emotion in the room with you when you enter, this is something that as an expressive, I've learned to give up.
Really?
Well, as an expressive, you tend to inflict your emotion on others. And so if I come home and I'm in a bad mood, my kids pick up on it right away. And so I've learned that when I come in, I don't need to say, why are all the lights on? Or who left the car in the driveway where I can't park? I just need to let that go. So that's an illustration of...
That's very self-aware of
that's
you.
That's a very self-aware.
I don't have that thing.
I don't do that anymore. Well, maybe I don't. Second one, managing our emotions, the ability to act on the findings when being self-aware. So doing something with it. Empathy, we've talked about, and it's one of our 16, the ability to sense others' emotions and emotional needs, responding to them accordingly. And then social skills, the ability to connect with others successfully and build relationships on it. Listen to the implication of women versus men in that. And women are, well, social looks different for women than it does for men. Maybe we should just say that. Being a good team builder, knowing how to address people's needs if they're going through change, that's a great sign of empathy and social skills. And then on this last page, I think one of these we've talked about a lot, but I thought I'd give folks an actionable strategy regarding, we've talked about lots of actionable strategies, one more of them regarding the empathizing. Mm-hmm. Empathizing doesn't need to look like the mothering thing, oh, you poor thing. And my mom has a way of empathizing that when I'm trying to kind of be strong about something, she'll go, oh, honey, and then I'll start crying.
God bless
like,
you.
Okay, that's not helpful, Mom. but in a work environment, empathizing is simply reflecting on what's happened. For example, if you're starting a meeting, maybe you're in charge of it, but you're starting it, someone comes in late, they're bringing their emotion in with it, or they're flustered because traffic was bad, or they're irritated because 4 out of the 5 of us wanted to have it at this time, and they didn't, and they were the ones that had to stretch their schedule. So you know that there's something going on in their head that's keeping them from being in the meeting, right? If you do nothing more than reflecting on what you're seeing, like, John comes in and says, God, this time is horrible to have a meeting. Traffic is terrible. Why are we doing this? Instead of pushing back on it, such as, well, this is what we've decided, so just buck up.
Right.
Instead saying, yeah, I know, it's difficult for you, and it is a challenge to get here during this time of the morning.
It just worked for the rest of us this
that's
time.
Empathizing.
Yeah.
That's empathizing without sounding sappy. It's reflecting on where somebody is. And then sensing undercurrents. We've talked a little bit about when you're negotiating, when you're in a meeting where somebody says something inappropriate or somebody's fidgeting or body language, like the illustration.
So we challenge you to kind of take these two things, or once you do the assessment, take the things that you have in your strengths and look at those and use those in your next week. Really take your strengths and build on them.
can't
emphasize that enough.
We think it's an ongoing. In fact, one of the ways that this is kind of reflective in the way we wrote Skirt Strategies, like you said, Megan, in small actionable pieces. I think the way that leadership skills and changing and just getting better, we'll just generalize it, just getting better at anything, is best implemented is not going away to training for a week. It's taking small pieces of what on the spot, catch yourself doing it. What am I doing? What am I sensing? Where's the awareness? And then push it just a little bit as to what do I want it to be? What would be a better way of doing this? And or what am I doing well that I want to be doing? That I want to be doing better.
And yeah. Questions are piling in, FYI.
Okay, we better take them.
Oh, let's
them,
get
right?
to some of them.
Yeah, all of a sudden we got a big flurry of questions. So one of our men wrote and said, you know, that he really felt great seminar, wonderful topic and approach. He was really glad that you stressed at the beginning the man-woman polarization. As far as, you know, being a generalization or a genderalization, I really like your new word. I think that works.
Well, let's take it Wikipedia. Somebody.
What's that?
With the academics that are in the room, so one of them can enter it in Wikipedia for us.
Yes. And
okay, go on.
And so then he said when he took the test, he found that he was really strong in the sensing situations and much stronger than other men or women that he knows.
Interesting.
Yeah. So
that's
anyway.
Great.
And
did he think we were pretty?
I'm just kidding.
I'm just kidding.
He did not comment on that, but he'll hear the recording. He'll be able to tell you. All right. And then another great question is someone saying that the collaborative leadership model works well with strong buy-in from the team. What happens when you have one or more team members who don't buy in and actually prove disruptive? You know, how can you regain some forward motion? And this is something she saw happening recently to a colleague.
Yeah. I have a parallel story to that because I'm working on a big project right now that has switched over from a man leader to a woman leader. And the team was having that same problem. This, of course, is not saying that he was doing it wrong and she's doing it better, but she took a different approach. She was having the same problem, and he kept hitting a wall on getting group buy-in and accountability. She has gone about it completely differently. She's talked one-on-one to every one of the bosses over everyone in those teams. Not that she was going around them, but just doing an initial discovery. What do you think of this? What's going on? And then she's done one-on-one with each of those team members. So my answer to that question, Megan, might be you may try pulling those people off one-on-one and without being threatening at all, and there's lots of ways to be non-threatening, including making it about how can we work better together or what are your expectations of us moving forward as a team or is there something that's really important to you in making things happen in these meetings that I might be missing. So you make it all about what they need. And in a one-on-one, I'll tell you, a woman is great at building that kind of a relationship. It's more work. It's a lot more work, but it's tons more effective.
Yeah, and I think that really is a big part as far as people, when they feel so pressed for time anyway, they think, oh, my word, now I've got, you know, how come people can't just play nice? I need to spend time doing that. And I think on important enough projects, if people will look at it as it's investing, you're investing your time, because how much time, let alone energy, is being wasted when someone is being a knucklehead on a project or something like that. Carol, did you have an additional answer on this one?
I think great leaders do bring everybody in, and they do it on a personal basis. You know, take those few people aside and don't have the talk, pointing finger talk. Have the collaboration. You know, how can we get this moving forward? I see you're as frustrated as I am. Bring them into, you know, to the solutions to moving this forward. The other thing I would say is
is the piece of research on gender equity as an investment concept may work if you have some men in a group who just don't buy into the fact that you need to have gender balance. Have them read that.
Because it's written by men.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the PAX.
Yeah, the PAX one. Sorry.
PAX. Okay.
So that's all we have to say about that.
All right. And here is another one. So this is someone who has a baby boomer female boss, and the person who's writing is younger than that. And she said, she acts with many of the discussed stereotypical male traits, but also wants to mother the person who's writing in and also be her pal. And she said, for example, she's very uncomfortable when I include her on decision-making. And she says, my intent is to make her feel included and make sure the results of actions work for our whole office. And she would love your thoughts on this.
So she's trying to figure out how to get the part where she's decision-making with her is not
mm-hmm.
working?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like, that somehow she's resisting being included in that. So the boss is resisting being included in that way and, I guess, talking with the person who wrote in.
Yeah.
Well, and I would say maybe the boss is looking for that person to make decisions on her own and hoping that she will take on that decision-making process and not have to include the boss. And I have this situation a lot in my work, is that I want people to, you know, in their realm of work, I want them to make the decisions that they are capable of making and not include me because I've got so much else going on. Now, if then I'm going to come back and tell them that their decision making was wrong, then that dynamic doesn't work. If it's that she's giving her a little bit of leash in order to make her own decisions, then maybe you don't need to circle back to the boss with that decision making process. Go ahead, Katie has something to say.
Oh, well, so exactly what you're talking about is a conversation that the two of them need to have. The
mm-hmm.
younger woman is sensing that everything that Carol just said right there. The younger woman is trying to guess what's going on. And this is where our sensing needs to become actionable, because mm-hmm. we walk away and, you know, you think, okay, did she want this? Did she want this? There's a leadership skill in taking initiative and asking what's called the question behind the question.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly are you wanting? Or what, you've got to say this, of course, in a diplomatic way, but, you know, reflect what you're hearing. It sounds to me like you want me to be more independent with my decision-making. Am I right? Or it sounds to me like you feel like this is not your area of expertise. Should I brief you on it more often? You're trying to find out what that undercurrent is that is having her react this way.
Mm-hmm.
That's very good. And it could be, you know, that she doesn't want you making decisions. But it sounds to me like she wants you to make the decisions.
Yeah.
And
a man right here would say,
you need to ask.
A man right here would say, why don't you just ask her? And instead we're kind of doing this, okay, what she want? You're
right.
You're the sensing is great. Take it to the next step.
Mhm. Yeah. Yeah, I think a conversation would be good to check in on that. All right, and here is another question from someone who is a professor, and she is one of the young members of her very large department, and so with lots of older academics and so forth, and she really
mm-hmm.
wants to take a step up and is wondering
mm-hmm.
what your advice would be on leading teams who are older than you are and more experienced than you are.
Mm-hmm. It's not about experience. It's about the capability to pull people together. In fact, on one of my websites, because I'm getting to have way too many right now, but the one that before Skirt Strategies was just about leadership, one of my quotes is, leadership is not about having all the answers. Leadership is knowing how to extract the answers. And that's exactly what her role is. Remember that experience is important, but the leadership role is what collaborates all those experiences and puts them into play. And if that's indeed her role, then that's what she needs to pay attention to. The fact that she's being respectful of the age difference is really very important. And she will come up against habits that a different generation does differently. I'm working right now with somebody that's at a generation above me. She's probably 70. And she has a different view of the way protocol is in a workplace. She has more of an old-fashioned
hierarchy.
View. Yeah. And that's okay. And, in fact, when she calls, she'll call and leave a message, and she leaves. She says, hello, I'll call her Jane. She'll say, Katie, this is Jane. It's Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. And I told her the other day, I said, you know, your timestamp comes in on every call day. I can see who you are and what time you called. And she said, I guess I don't need to say that anymore. I said, you don't need to do that. You can if you feel comfortable doing it, but I don't need it. Just know that. And she said, oh, okay. So there's those different habits that are amongst baby boomers and 20, 30-year-olds.
Pretty
and,
ingrained, yeah.
Yeah, just know that that's what we might be comfortable with, but be careful about judging them for it.
And, okay, the other thing I would say to this young lady who has some older folks, I mean, I started out in the business world when I was 21. I owned my own restaurants, and, you know, people would come in and say, can I speak to the owner or manager? They were looking for an older gentleman, and I'd say, you're looking at her. And, you know, I had to make a lot of my own decisions and do a lot of things. So I would say the minute you start getting respect from people because you get the job done, because you show up on time. I mean, there's some very basic things that, you know, and you're the one who does, in a meeting, you sit at the table,
mm-hmm.
and you bring people's ideas together. You say, so what I hear you saying is,
mm-hmm.
bring that all together, and that's what Katie said.
Be a good listener.
Be a good listener, collate ideas, and then be the one who takes down the action items and makes the assignments.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be surprised how much control you can take of a group just by being the minute taker.
Mm-hmm.
So
you can write whatever minutes you want.
I absolutely, you know, people volunteer me all the time, and I say, that's good.
The last piece I would leave with her is not to get too wrapped around the axle about the differences. I think what Carol says, if you focus on listening, focus on doing, focus on being competent, keep the respect there, be aware, but just do your job and keep your confidence high.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think people are looking for leaders.
Yes.
And
yeah, they are. We all are.
Absolutely. And so I think that as everybody in today's class and listening to the recording later, as people are just thinking, well, you know, I wonder if I should step up, for crying out loud, step up, because we all need and want people to be leading, and whether they're leading by inspiring us or leading by showing us a possible path. I mean, there's just so many possible ways that people can lead, and I would definitely encourage people to be building on their strengths and working with what they've learned today.
Yeah, initiative says a lot.
I was going to say take initiative and just start down the path. People will very quickly see you as a leader. You got to see yourself as a leader first.
Mm-hmm.
And once you do, you know, act as if and become that. You'll be sitting at the table and the head of the table very soon.
Yeah, yes, one of my favorite strategies, act as if.
Act as if.
Yeah, I was having a back and forth on a blog today with someone about that, she's a wonderful CEO, and we were talking about the act as if part. I would encourage people to take a look at page 10 in the packet, because of course you can see how very gorgeous Katie and Carol are.
We so don't look anybody, like that, by the way.
Case, well, I told somebody the other day I was doing a webinar, and I had a picture of myself that isn't, of course, it is actually a real picture. It's just, you know, it's one of those when you're getting your picture taken, kind of like this one of you two.
Oh, and then they edit over and over again. They take out wrinkles and they take out bags. And
I was
like,
perfectly happy with that, by the way.
It's all good. And I
told didn't recognize me.
Yeah, and I told him at the beginning of the webinar, I said, now I want you to imagine that this is exactly how I look today, and then started laughing because I know people know that when I'm teaching teleseminars and webinars, it's not necessarily a good look. So, FYI, I encourage people to go to skirtstrategies.com. I think you could hear today from a variety of the different studies and information and so forth that's available right when you go to the site. And so you can take a look at that. If anybody hasn't done the assessmyskills.com, I encourage you to do it. It was fun and fast, and I was very impressed with how it worked. And I got back a little report right away that told me which of those four quadrants I was the strongest in. And so that was cool how that worked. And then the Skirt Strategies book would definitely be one for you to look at, whether it's in your local bookstore if you want to look for it there, or search for it at Amazon or wherever else it is that you buy your books. And
right, and you're right, Megan, the format of that book is a little bit different. It's 249 success tips for women in leadership, and what we have found is, you know, it's not a tome. You don't sit down and read it and like novel-like, but it's a great reference book for women's networks, mentoring groups, mastermind groups, because you can, in fact, we've had groups do this, and women's network will, or a book club, they'll pick one of the 249 and it'll be their discussion area for the day. And some of them are, you know, some of them are quick, and others are controversial, and, you know, push back on it and chew on it. And it's great for mentoring. If any of you are in a mentoring environment, it's great for mentoring, because I have yet to find a mentoring program that has thrived without having a set of topical discussion items.
And this can be your topic.
This could be your topic.
Yeah. And these are those are some of the people that I've given this to, are people that would perceive me as a mentor or as someone that they look up to. And I felt like it would be excellent for them to have that to refer to and learn from. And I agree with you. You want to discuss it so that whether people are having lunch and learns or masterminds or any number of other possible venues, that you need something to focus on and really think about as you grow in your strengths and your leadership. All right. What would be your last words of wisdom for people?
Well, let me just kind of recap what we have here, that if somebody's looking for more, because if you're feeling like, oh, my God, I got to do this more often – if you're on that free mailing list, which you can do through assessmyskills.com, or you can just go to Skirt Strategies on a couple of the pages. You just give me an email and the first name, and we'll keep you in the loop at least monthly. We've got a monthly this is free. We've got a monthly video that Carol and I do, and you'll get a little bit of tip with it. It's no more than 10 or 15 minutes each month. Each month we drill down into a different area. April, it's all about your financial mindset and success based on your financial remunerations, where you see your value and are you making what you're worth, and it's very money type story. And then we'll go into some other time management and know your value later on in the summer. If you want more than that, we have a monthly subscription. It's only $27 a month, but we'll keep you held accountable. We'll send you something every Monday morning about that topic. We'll give you more specifics around developing a skill in it, and we give you an audio podcast that you listen to each Monday morning, and a one page that kind of tasks you with thinking about this and setting some intent
and looking at strategically looking at your goals on a weekly basis, you know, keeping in mind those big rocks, as they say, in Franklin Covey.
Perspective.
And your perspective. The other thing I'd like to talk about is we have a leadership retreat coming up in Santa Fe in October. That's on our website as well. You know, we're going to be going through lots of fun things at that retreat, and Santa Fe is gorgeous in the fall.
And that's under events on the webpage, and, you know, we haven't put up a full description webpage yet that shows all the details, so we will do that we will put that on there, but just know that you can go to that. If you're on our email list, you'll be kept apprised of that, but we'd love to have you there.
That's it.
Food
and
drink.
Sounds great. Thank you so much, Megan, for making this possible. We really, really appreciate
Megan,
you and
rock.
the ladies that follow you. You rock.
The Meganites.
Well, oh, I like that name. I like that
it's
name.
Cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's so great because, you know, we had met virtually and then not, you know, even after the first time I hosted you, Katie, and then, you know, we continued to work together on some projects, and then finally last year in Albuquerque actually got to meet face-to-face, and
very
you know, it was wonderful. Yeah, so I love the time that we live in and getting to connect with people from all over. And so today we had people from all over the United States and Canada, and then some other countries also represented. And I appreciate everybody who's here. And those of you who are live, you'll get the recording later today, and then you'll have that. And please go to skirtstrategies.com. There's so much there for you. And check out all the cool things that Carol and Katie are doing. So thanks to both of you and to everybody else. I'm going to go ahead and unmute people so that they can jump in and say goodbye. Just a sec.
All callers are muted. All callers are unmuted.
There we go. All right. So thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.